Hey everybody, Jay Hunter here with a pilot for OSW Old School Wrestling Reviews, or I don't know, the Briggs WWF Video Classic Reviews. That's just so I can call it VCRs. Should be pretty awesome. And it's just to work out like timing and editing and production to see if doing a wrestling vodcast is actually viable or if it's just too much work. So today I'm going to run down the oft-forgotten show to all but huge wrestling nerds called Black Saturday. So there's a bit of a history lesson involved before I actually run down the card. Just to set up the scene, you know, what wrestling was like back in the 80s. So in the 70s and the 80s, there were about 25 different wrestling companies who all worked in their own states, like, or areas, you know, mostly called territories, could be a couple of states, you know. So the Carolinas had the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, the AWA were from Minnesota, Calgary Stampede Wrestling, those kind of things. And although they traded wrestlers, their respective owners, aka, you know, the promoters, you know, Vince McMahon or Vern Gagne, that kind of thing, or Stu Hart, as you know, Jim Crockett, they'd agreed not to compete against each other. So each wrestling company had an area of America where they ran live events and aired wrestling shows on the local TV station, and they didn't cross into each other's borders. So they stuck to their own. It's a regional show, no national TV deals. So these territories, they booked their own matches, they had their own stars, but all of them were part of the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, which were a governing body that united the territories and had its own weekly TV show. So their main guy was the NWA champion, and he'd go from each of the NWA territories, he'd go from area to area and face their champion, make them look good, that kind of thing. Until someone else was champion, and then he'd go and tour around the states to each of the NWA territories. So the WWF, which is formerly the WWWF, were based out of Stamford, Connecticut, New York, okay, so the northeast of America. And they left the NWA in the 1960s and were working by themselves. Vince McMahon bought the WWF from his father, which is Vincent J. McMahon, or Vincent Sr., in 1980, and he neglected to tell his father of his really lofty goals and ideas. Like, he wanted to turn the regional promotion of the WWF into a national company. He went against his ailing father's wishes as he went into direct competition against other promoters, buying up TV slots and in different regions and airing his WWF shows. I can't emphasize how incredulous and how huge it was to go against the working agreement of every other promoter and wrestling company in America. Like, that is ridiculous. Like, Vince McMahon, he certainly has big, massive balls of steel, or he got the grapefruits. Anyway, as he acquired more TV slots, he was able to bring in more big names and talent, which brought in more money, which went straight back into the company and continued to grow in the same venture, more TV slots, more names, more money, and so on. So it was ruthless, but it was very successful business model. So he knew, with the advent of cable television coming in the 80s, the future of wrestling was a nationally televised program, and knew what he had to do to make his dream a reality. In 1972, Ted Turner, yes, that Ted Turner, launched Georgia Championship Wrestling on his superstation WTBS, or TBS. It was often the highest rated cable program on TV, so Ted always had a soft spot for wrestling. By 1981, GCW, which was newly christened World Championship Wrestling to seem less regional, was doing great. Things took a bit of a dip due to poor business decisions from booker slash part owner Ole Anderson. So seeing the potential in Vince McMahon's vision and the WWF, the Briscoe brothers, Jerry and Jack, sold their majority stock in Georgia Championship Wrestling to Vince. So with that sale, Vince acquired the time slot from WTBS. And so in addition to like the WWF shows airing, the MSG shows airing on the MSG network, the TV tapings from on USA Network and local TV stations around America showing the nationally syndicated shows, Vince now had the major time slot and channel as his own. So we fast forward to Black Saturday. Black Saturday refers to the day Georgia Championship Wrestling fans tuned into TBS on Saturday, 14th of July 1984, and instead of being greeted by Gordon Solie, they saw Vince McMahon on their TV sets introducing WWF matches, although he wouldn't call it that. Anyway, so let's have a look at a show that was deemed to be one of Vince McMahon's biggest failures.
Everybody, and welcome to World Championship Wrestling. On behalf of WTBS, it's a pleasure to welcome the World Wrestling Federation. Exciting new matches, great competitors from all over the world. And here's the man to tell you all about it. Here's Vince McMahon. Vince?
Thank you very much, Freddie.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. It is indeed a pleasure to be associated with WTBS, and we promise to bring you the greatest in professional wrestling entertainment in the world today.
All right, so let's run down the show. Okay, so we, as you can see there, we saw the WCW music and the logo, and Vince is standing in front of the WCW backdrop. Also notice that he failed to say WWF in the opening segment. I guess it's to sucker the fans in into continuing to watch. Like a deer in headlights, with a rod up his ass, he runs down the card. Alright, so match one here, it's Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch versus Nick DiCarlo and Special Delivery Jones. It's a pretty short match. DiCarlo and Jones worked as faces, Adonis and Murdoch as heels, but curiously enough, they're not announced as the WWF Tag Team Champions. Before the match started, for some reason Adonis keeps kicking the bottom turnbuckle. I don't know what that about. Maybe he's stretching the ropes, who knows. So the crowd is very appreciative, something you really don't get today. Moves like a simple hammerlock reversal or a big power slam get big pops. You know, the crowd really appreciate it. SD Jones, as a black wrestler, he has to dance a little. You can see him jucking and jiving there. So SD dominates the heels dominate DiCarlo. Even though the heels are wearing the most basic trunks, you know, which plain black. At least they're matching, unlike the DiCarlo and Jones. So, builds to a hot tag for SD. He gets cut off, then he tags to DiCarlo, who gets cut off. The heels finish by doing a modified Doomsday device. Murdoch does like a back body drop, while Adonis does a kind of clothesline, lazy headlock bulldog from the top ropes, and they get to three in about 5 minutes. It's a simple throwaway match. So that hard cut to a pre-tape of Vince McMahon segueing to an interview conducted by Mean Gene Okerlund with George the Animal Steel with Mr. Fuji. So Fuji's there looking like Oddjob, cuts the typical stereotype of an evil Japanese man. He says that only he can communicate with Steel via mind to mind, whatever that means. Then he just asks Steel in plain English to say something. And then Steel eventually blurts out, Fuji, to sell that he's no ordinary man. I guess he's mongoloid. Alright, match two is Jesse the Body Ventura versus Chris Curtis. Yes, the Chris Curtis. Another jobber match. This is how it was back in the 80s. But still, you know, you'd reckon Vince would want to make a good impression with some big matches on his first show on a rival company station. But, you know, there you go. Ventura points at some Minnesotan footballer in the crowd. I didn't catch the name, but it's at this point that, wow, you really notice that you can't see any of the crowd. This is also something that happened in the 80s. Outside the ring, it's almost pitch black. You can see about three rows back. So Ventura slowly beats down Curtis, and I mean slowly, with old school moves such as like raking the face with the laces of your boots, chops, throw to the ropes, forearm to the back, that kind of thing. Such a slow pace. Jesus. In one of his only pieces of offense, Curtis does a wind-up before punching. You know, I love wrestling logic. Like, I don't get how winding up adds anything to a punch. Like, you have to stop winding in a, you know, and punch in a different direction. I don't know. Anyway, Curtis verbally submits via a backbreaker submission. I think it's called the body breaker. So Ventura wins after depressingly slow 4 minutes of wrestling. It's horrific. Man, the speed, it boggles the mind. Like, anyway, so back with Mean Gene has an interview with B. Brian Blair. He just lists off who's champion in WWF at the time. Cuts a boring babyface promo saying that he's tagging with someone called Spike. Meh. Then Alexis Smirnoff comes in and puts all of those cheese champions on notice. It's a typical Russian heel promo. He says he's gonna step your brain out with his big Cusack. I imagine it's a boot. You know. Anyway, his diction and accent vary throughout the promo. So, like, obviously you're not Russian. So, he is Canadian anyway. You know, he did have a red cloak and looks a bit like Zangief. So that's pretty cool. So back in the studio, Vince shields the WWF magazine and saying, "Where's the beef?" Yep. So the third match is Ron Hutchinson versus the Iron Sheik. Sheik is led to the ring by Ayatollah Fred Blassie. You gotta love the cheap heat. Sheik gets on the mic and says, "Iran number one." And this is what, 84? I'm sure he's been saying it for a long time, but you know, he did say that last year at WWE's Old School Raw, you know. The capacity crowd chant, "Iran sucks, Iran sucks." Come on, like. Well, I guess you can't chant "Iran sucks," but you know, it's not as easy to say, but come on, like. Anyway, Sheik, he's quite thick looking, but he's in very good shape at the time, and there is a crowd chant for Slaughter, which they wouldn't do, you know, come WrestleMania 7 anyway. It's another squash match. You know, Sheik hits the inverted backbreaker and then the camel clutch for the win in about 2 minutes. Did the trick, you know. He did work the crowd a lot, and they booed a lot. So there you go, another round of Iran number one and working the crowd. So match number four is Big John Studd versus Bobo Brazil. Vince calls Bobo Brazil possibly the greatest black wrestler of all time. And I noticed when they cut to the ring, there was a different announcer. It's a black announcer. Like, I wonder if that was just coincidence or Bobo Brazil had his own announcer. By the way, no one has any entrance themes. This is before entrance themes. It was, you know, it was painfully obvious that this match was in a different arena. It is much better lit, I'll give that up, but it had a Spectrum logo on the mat. That's the arena they were in. There was a bloody never-ending bear hug spot from Stud. Bobo reverses it with a bear hug of his own. Cheers, yeah. Stalling, it's a slow match. Stud gets a headlock in. There's cutting minor comeback spots from Bobo. Stud's working the, you know, I'm a giant, big man against a smaller man type of match. And he wins with an elbow drop from the canvas after Bobo misses the leg drop. Oh, it's awful. Apparently this is Bobo's big comeback match. It was a squash match. Yeah, hilariously, the announcer gets back into the ring to announce Stud as the winner. Useless match. I'll let the Murdoch Adonis tag match away with it, but these sort of matches, they are jobber matches. And by the way, that was your main event as well. So back to Vince, and he runs down next week's card, which includes the incredible Hulk Hogan. It was before Hulk gained immortality. Well, you know that Vince Sr. named him Hulk after the Marvel superhero, and Hogan from his Irish roots. But Terry, or Terrence, as Mr. Anderson calls him, Belair owns the trademark. Well, he rents it from Marvel anyway, so that's why he goes around Hulk Hogan in different, everywhere in the world. The original broadcast had a stellar main event of an interview with Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, which WWE 24/7 didn't show. But here is what was said. So it's Oakland conducting the interview. So Oakland, "What makes you so wonderful?" And Orndorff replies, "For one, I've got hair. women everywhere leave their husbands, the divorce rates go up. And Gina replies, doubles? And Paul says, I've been in a few. And that's that. And just so we get a roundup from the show, so we got Adrian Adonis and Dick Murdoch squashing Nick DiCarlo and SD Jones. You got an interview with Mr. Fuji with showing off Georgie Animal Steel. Squash match where Aventurer goes over Chris Curtis. We got a bland face interview with B. Brian Blair. And then the Russian Alexis Smirnov. We got a squash match with Sheik going over Ron Hutchinson, and we got a squash match with Big John Studd going over Bobo Brazil, and an Orndorff interview we didn't get to see. This show was pretty shit, but listen, like, it's the 80s and it's a long time away from Bret Owen at WrestleMania 10. Haven't even had WrestleMania 1, that was next year. The show is of great historical significance, as it was a huge step up in Vince's plan to run other territories out of business and become a national promotion, and it did show you who WWF were pushing as their biggest stars, if you don't count Hogan and Andre and co, because they weren't on the show, but you can read about them in the WWF magazine. I can't stress how shocking this would have been to be watching at the time. Like, so 1984, there is no internet. Wrestling Observer was in its first year, and at the time was largely a tape trading list with results from shows that were a couple of weeks old. So nobody knew about this, and nothing like this had ever happened before. It'd be like for me, who didn't read Dirt Sheets in 2001, didn't get WCW, and seeing Vince McMahon on WCW Nitro with the simulcast. It was ridiculous. It was a massive coup. But anyway, for this show on Black Saturday, well, it's too bad the show completely tanked. See, what happened is Georgia Championship Wrestling, or now it's known as WCW, they showcased a very different pro wrestling show than Vince. Like, instead of the cartoony, glitzy, heavily gimmicked characters, GCW presented tough, gritty wrestlers who shed blood in a more serious sporting contest. So there was serious outcry from the audience, as you can imagine, as their TV show for 12 years was replaced with a much more kid-friendly product. To compound matters, like, instead of showing new WWF matches or big matches as he agreed to, he just aired highlights of, you know, WWF Superstars tapings. Like, the numbers plummeted. You know, TBS was inundated with thousands of angry calls and letters. At the time, McMahon responded to the complaints in an Atlanta Journal-Constitution news article by saying, we'll show those complainers the difference between a major league and a minor league promotion, given time. Well, he was wrong. In just 2 weeks, TBS responded to the fan backlash, and they brought Ole Anderson's new Championship Wrestling from Georgia promotion on Saturday morning, the WWF time slot being on Saturday night. I guess Georgia Championship Wrestling from Georgia was complete with GCW's famed commentator Gordon Solie. McMahon was pissed, so like, he reneged on his deal with Turner to make new WWF TV shows at TBS studios, and just sent in other TV tapings programs. So things got worse between McMahon and Turner, as TBS also brought in Bill Watts' Mid-South Wrestling, which is hosted by Jim Ross, on Sunday morning. And that drew better ratings than the WWF. 2 weeks. That's much shorter than TNA's Monday Night War in 2010. So, anyway, so Jim Crockett, he'd been running Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, which ran a similar product to GCW. Realizing Vince and Ted couldn't work together, Crockett paid Vince $1 million to buy out the time slot and brought in formerly GCW talent. And this set up the partnership that would blossom into World Championship Wrestling on Ted Turner's TV station, as we know it. And at the time, well, it set the seeds to the biggest boom period in wrestling history in the late 90s with WWF and WCW. So, Black Saturday, a bad show, but it's huge in historical significance. I wouldn't recommend seeking it out. Like, it's a pile of shite show, but it is quite interesting in itself. I think this would be the part of the show where I guess the gauntlet, where so we'd finish the show and we'd have wrapped up the show and given our thoughts on it and, you know, whatever shtick we want to put in there, like the Scott Putzke Award, that kind of thing. And you know, this part, you can talk about anything in pro wrestling today. Hopefully keep it somewhat general, you know, so it'll still be applicable in a couple of months or hopefully a few years, I guess. Just something to think about in wrestling. And we'll just put this to, you know, the titantron of whatever wrestler we're talking about or someone that it is applicable to. And, you know, then do the out credits and that's that. All right. So, yeah, let me know what you thought of it anyway. If you have any comments or suggestions, you know, just either, you know, reply to the video or, you know, hit me up on Facebook or something, you know, and trying to iron this stuff out before, you know, actually producing a show anyway. All right, I'm out. Thanks for watching.